But we've kind of been talking this God's kingdom. We're actually talking about points of tension. Points of tension between two things. And so if you remember, Alex Chow came and he kind of talked about the beauty of diversity. And we talked about different races and the tension that exists between different races. And the tension that exists in a church that has the word Chinese on the outside and yet wants to welcome different races, and where that tension kind of lies. Because we know that there's actually a beauty in diversity, a beauty in different cultures and different people coming together. There are challenges, yes, but there's also a lot of beauty and richness there. Today what I'm talking about is one of the tension points is actually between generations, between the older and the younger. And there is a gap, and there is a growing gap, and you always feel this gap. And I realized when you're younger, you don't think that gap is such a big deal, because you just think all the older people are just, you just assume they're kind of slower and they just don't know as much anymore. I think there's a real arrogance to youth. And I was one of those. And then along the way, I got old. And now I kind of look down on the younger people thinking, why are they so arrogant? They think they know everything. They know nothing. Children today. And I've been trying, I gotta be honest, I've been really trying to connect with this younger generation. So this week in Life Group, they made me download Clash of Clans. So some of you know what I'm talking about, the others of you don't. And I was like, is this some sort of, because I grew up with Nintendo, I'm like, oh, it's just a game, right? It's just a video game, you download it, you play it. But then listening to them, it's a social experience. And they're like, well, I'm on it, but I'm kind of on it to chat. And I'm like, you're on it to chat on a section of your screen that is a quarter of the size of your screen already, with words that are about 4 points high. You're going to chat there. I don't understand. And you share resources with each other. And in my head, I'm thinking to myself, gosh, don't these guys have anything better to do with their lives? And yet, here I am, faithfully trying to learn how to play, building my clan castle. And to give you an example of what this generation gap is like, and I didn't realize it, I downloaded this game on my phone at the end of Life Group, or at the beginning of Life Group, because they were forcing me to. And then the next day I got home and my son was like, you got that game for me, you downloaded that game for me. I'm like, what are you talking about? This is Alex, he's 7. You got that game for me. I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. Because I forgot, when I download things on my phone, it'll show up on the iPad. And the next morning, Alex is like, you got Clash of Clans. And I was like, you know what Clash of Clans is? And he's like, yeah, my friends in school are always talking about it. I'm like, oh my goodness. A generation gap exists. I didn't even know about it. And this whole time, I thought I was one step ahead of my son, only to realize he thinks of me as one person too slow behind him, but still with the power to download apps that he doesn't have. Although he did say, oh, I know why Dad got it, because it's free. He does understand that much. It kind of brings me to and I thought this picture is kind of a good one, because this is what Pinterest is for, stuff like this. You have this older gentleman holding a picture of his son, who's holding a picture of his son, who's holding a picture of his son, and it's got this whole kind of inception sort of thing. And you have this picture of actually 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 generations kind of in this one kind of snapshot. And it's in this kind of picture, when you see it, that you can kind of see, like, oh, actually, when the Bible talks about, and so-and-so begot so-and-so who begot so-and-so who begot so-and-so, it is this kind of picture. There is a connection there. There is a legacy. There is history. There is story. But because we're so used to thinking just about ourselves, our own kind of bubble, our own world, we forget about that. We forget that there is a connection. 2 weeks ago, I was sitting in Pigeon Park. What's the St. Paul's Cathedral? Okay, so we had this discussion on what we should call it, because only some people know it as Pigeon Park. St. Paul's Cathedral, and I sat down on this bench because I was waiting for the burrito truck to open to buy some burritos to share with some people I was meeting. And so I was waiting for the burrito truck. So I sat down on this habaneros, good burritos, by the way. Anyway, so I sat down on this bench, and I was sitting there preparing a message, kind of thinking through things. And then this old couple walked by. And so the old man did not want to sit next to me, but the old lady was like, I want to sit you here so that I can go off and do something else, because you can't walk fast enough anymore. So the conversation was, It was really awkward because I'm sitting there. The conversation was, oh, let's sit here. So I don't want to sit here. So let's just sit here. No, we can just sit here. There's space there. It's like, no, it's okay. I'll just keep going. She said, just sit there and then I'll be right back. And so he sat down. So they sat down. He turns to me and says, can I sit here? And I said, yeah, of course. It's not my bench. I don't own it. You can sit anywhere you like. I thought I was being clever, but I realize now I just sound rude. So he sat down next to me, and then being British that I am, immediately I said, good weather we're having. Or actually, to be a true British, oh, because it was sunny. So it was sunny, so actually I said, good weather, but I'm sure the rain will come tomorrow, to be truly British. And then he looked and said, oh, yeah, yeah. And then he just would not stop talking. For a man who did not want to sit next to me, I was shocked. And he started going on, and at this point I thought to myself, that burrito truck is opening. And I need to buy it, and I need to go because my parking's going to run out. Totally only thinking this way. He starts talking to me about the metal fencing around the park. He says, in the war, they wouldn't have been any of this fencing. They would have taken it all down and melted. And I was like, I believe you are correct. That is an interesting fact. And then he started talking about he had a knee surgery, and he was getting a suit, but after his knee surgery, he lost weight. And then he started talking about, his dad was in the war, and he was really good with metal. He was like a real craftsman, so he was building the carburetors. And then he started talking to me a little bit more about his dad. He's saying, yeah, actually, his dad was in Birmingham, and he was so good at building stuff with metal, they wouldn't send him to the war because he was too skilled. And I was like, oh, so he's... That's healing. So we're making conversations. He's telling me a little bit more. He's saying, yeah, during the war, this whole place got completely blitzed, completely destroyed. And then he was talking about a factory in Dudley. He's saying that place got completely destroyed. Bombs completely destroyed the whole building. He said his father had to work in a shop that didn't have a roof. The reason it didn't have a roof was so that it wouldn't be spotted by bombers. So they'd turn off all the lights and just keep it off. And he said, yeah. And so his dad survived that. But then he's talking about this building that got destroyed. And he said, yeah, now they just concreted the whole place and built another shop on top. And I thought to myself, oh, yeah. Because he said, yeah, hundreds of people died in this bombing raid. Hundreds of people died. And now they just concreted it over. And I was like, he was saying it not bitterly, kind of matter-of-factly, but at the same time, in this whole conversation, I realized this man, he has history here. He is part of a narrative of this country that is much longer than I have ever been. But then it was a little bit further than. Then being an immigrant to America, I realized I have no history with any place. I have no generational history that goes back into one solid place that I can remember that I am part of. The furthest back I go is just to how old I am, which would be, I think the most significant event would be the Challenger space shuttle exploding. And for those of you guys who don't know what I'm talking about, you're like, what space shuttle? Is it run by Virgin? And for those of you guys, you'll be like, oh, that was so late in my life. And then it began to dawn on me that actually that there's a beauty in history, actually, in understanding that people come from a different place or have stories to tell from a different time. It's actually at that point where I kind of went home and started thinking about a little bit about the research about the history of Birmingham. And I guess, I don't know if they teach this in schools because I didn't grow up in schools here, but Birmingham was one of the most bombed places in the UK, third most after London, and they always would report it on the radio as a town in the Midlands was heavily bombed, so the Germans wouldn't know how successful they were. But between 1940 and 1943, 1,852 tons of bombs were dropped into this city. And places were completely decimated, completely destroyed. And actually, do you guys know what this is? There's a Peace Garden just there. Do you know what it is? This thing is, actually. What is it? It's a church. This is actually St. Thomas Church. And it was bombed, and this is all that was left. And so they built a peace garden, a memorial, to commemorate that just here. And I was like, whoa, so we've been here this whole time, and I knew that it was a peace garden, and I thought it just looked like something from San Francisco. But actually, it's an existing church that was destroyed, and this was the only part that was left. And then you begin understanding like that there is a beauty in history, in stories, that gives weight to life. And this is so important, this weight to life. If you don't have this weight, something that tells a story from before, then you can just do whatever you want. You live with this kind of reckless arrogance because you believe that I just can do whatever I want in the future. But when you begin to understand the longer story, it's humbling. It reminds you that there is much more to life, to the story that we see here, to the story that we have here. And immediately, as we talk about this here in a highly ethnically homogenous kind of group, you have to start saying, wow, so there's people who have all these stories around us. One of the things I talked about in the evangelism workshop at Regen that I did, I said is, if you want to reach out to your friends, just ask them, hey, did your parents ever go to church? And if they say no, then you say, did your grandparents ever go to church? And they'll probably say, yeah. And then you say, huh, why did your grandparents go to church? Because I bet it's a question they've never asked. But as soon as they start thinking about their own history and they think, yeah, why did my grandparents go to church? What was it that brought them to God? These kind of sparks begin to help people understand that there is a story being told. For us as Christians, actually, the story being told goes all the way back into the beginning of the Bible, where it says, in the beginning. The Bible is this unfolding history, not a one written down for every single fact, but an unfolding history between God and his people. His people who eventually said, not just those people that he had chosen, but us, for all of us, can be part of this history, part of this story, this unfolding. But along the way, we also discover that actually for each of our generations, the reason we find it difficult to go back in time to listen to stories is because each of our generations have their own kind of distinct perspective, their own distinct way of thinking. And that's as ever more clear than if I... I like to tell myself I'm still young and hip, but that Microsoft thing that said how old you are told me I was 43. And so the delusion of me being young has passed. And I realized that when I talk... Okay, so sometimes I hang out with Ben and Mandy, and they start talking about, like, the 90s, and I'm like, yeah. But I'm in my head, I'm like, actually, no, I was born in the 70s. I don't really know what you're talking about. Power Rangers was never my thing. But because I want to be part, I want to feel young, I'll pretend. That's why I downloaded Clash of Clans and Snapchat. I have no idea what I'm doing. Okay, I'll be honest with you. The truth is out. I'm trying, but I don't. And there's a generation gap. And this generation gap exists along different levels of our congregation. And it's kind of cool, actually, because our congregation actually now has generation gaps. Because for a while, it didn't. We were all exactly the same. We're all young, almost about to have families. That was it. And we're all kind of in the same boat. But over time, God has kind of grown this church. There are youngers and olders and olders and youngers. And it's kind of like, okay, are we aware of this? See, each generation has defining memories, defining characteristics, defining attitudes. For me, the 1984 Olympics in Los Angeles is a defining memory for me, something that happened in time, the Challenger explosion. For the generation before me, the Vietnam War. The real understanding of the Thatcher years. Those are defining things for generation. For me, it was Reagan. It was the Cold War. It was nuclear threat. For this younger generation, it's 9/11. But maybe not even 9/11, because it's still even too young in their memories to remember that. You understand? And it begins to see where you kind of look, and sociologists spend a lot of time doing this, and we'll look at this a little bit, because it's kind of fun. There are some general generational categories. And as I put these up, don't feel offended. Don't feel like, no, that's not me. I'm not like that. They're just rough stereotypes, okay? People get over it, okay? And it has not major stuff to do with my message. It's just to point out some differences, all right? So there are traditionalists and builders. It's funny because this category gets named by all sorts of other things in sociology stuff. So the other thing they are called is the silent era. I'm like, wow, that's... horrible. Who wants to be called the silent group? Then there are the boomers. This is the baby boomers. They grew out of the post-war, so there's lots of them. That's why they're called boomers. There's a lot of them. There's Generation X, which is apparently me, because I'm a slacker. Why are you laughing, slacker? And then there are the millennials, who are also called Generation Y, who are also kind of called Generation Z. I don't know why. So anyways, no one's decided. And the interesting thing about this group is that, they're not from 2008. If you're curious, they're not very, 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 very old, and they went reverse in time. Superman didn't fly around the world enough times to make that happen, but it's roughly there. And I thought it'd be kind of fun to kind of look at some of the kind of defining things. So there's some keys here. Oopsie, I've pressed this button twice, so now it's going to jump to the next page, but let's go back. So if you have a look, so some of the keys in this kind of silent, they grew up, World War II was a big defining thing. So that old man that sat down with me on this bench had this persistent memory of things like there would be no walls here, there'd be no fences here because they would have melted all down from metal. They have a strong sense of hard work and loyalty and persistence. And what inspired me about him was like, he was like, yeah, I mean, my goal is I'm going to drive again. And, you know, even though I had this knee surgery, I'm just going to keep working hard. And he's very focused, very diligent, very loyal. He wants to work. He wants to give opportunity for future generations. They like stability, like constancy. And the way they like to learn is actually via a lecturer. They think that's the way they've always been taught. That's the way they learn the best. And I put this last category up, church. And these are some of my observations and some things taken from other sources too. But traditionally, they like longer messages. They didn't have a lot of singing. Definitely none of this highly emotive singing. A lot of their hymns were a lot more intellectual. They're a lot more longer-winded. In fact, actually, the hymns came out of the previous generation didn't even sing hymns. They just kind of did chanting or stuff like that. Their education was even a lot lower. Hymns actually were popular songs during the day, transformed into worship songs, choruses, but they wrote these long things. And there's a less need in church for an emotional connection, actually. They went there very much to be in a place where they were reverent, where they felt like they could learn and connect and know God. Not so much of just for the community or the aspect. We come to the boomers. Some of their defining things are the Vietnam War and the beginning of the Cold War. They are probably the most educated generation, they said, although Pew Research says that every generation to come thinks they're the most educated. They made a lot of sacrifices to get ahead. And they also had a growing distrust of government, challenging leaders. And they began to see, after World War II, when everyone started to rebuild the nation, they started to think, wow, this is great. And there was a lot of optimism there. But in the boomer generation, they started realizing, okay, actually not all of this is as good as it seems. With the Vietnam War, they start to really distrust the way governments worked. They start to have a greater fear, a greater sense of paranoia about these sort of things. The change, if you remember, kind of people, and they would be at the heart of this, it would be in their working ages around in the 1980s. So that you would see they're finding ways to be efficient. They were very driven for money. And actually, this is the first generation to really start getting divorced. Which, of course, has a knock-on effect for the following generation. The previous generation did not get divorced. They didn't really get divorced that much. But this group, they became more willing to get divorced, or actually things changed. In the learning, they had lectures, but they also liked to have the freedom to ask questions and to have some discussions. In the church, they have a greater engagement in the congregation. This is when you start to have more songs. And it was really funny because my wife pulled out this old worship book that I had put together like ages ago. And she brought it out. And I was like, oh, look, I'm going to sing a lot of these old Christian worship songs that we used to sing. And in my head, they're like, these are awesome songs. But as I was singing them, Matt, I could not stop laughing because some of them are so cheesy. It was so funny. Like, this is so fun. I was going to sing one today, but I thought, no, it's too bad. Some of them are really great still, but some of them was, I was like, how did I sing this growing up with a straight face? Because it was like, in the quiet of the night. It's like, it's so funny. It's like, well, this is so cheesy. I felt like Kermit the Frog should be singing this with me. But that was the kind of the rise of beginning to have these kind of choruses, these kind of songs. And there's also this idea of actually having some more media involved in this. So then we come to the Generation X, and this is, I guess, should be me. I'm the MTV generation. I grew up on Madonna and Michael Jackson. But this is the first generation that start to embrace social diversity a little bit more. And you can see this thing kind of flowing outward as well. You start to be more open toward different race, different classes, different religions, and different even gender roles. And you see this idea gets passed down to the next generation more and more. But there's actually a greater cynicism toward leadership. And a lot of this also came down to the breakdown of the nuclear family. As the parents started getting divorced and they spent more time with their jobs than the families, this generation grew up thinking, actually, I believe family is important. But they were so also disillusioned because they'd seen it break down so often. This also became the first generation that became more media aware. In technology, this is the change between, this is really where television took on a life of its own. So the first generation radio was your main thing, then television. But television for the boomers, like everyone watched like the same. Oh, but the UK was like that for many years, the same four channels. But there's a lot more trust for the media. There was a lot more belief. By this generation, there's a lot more commercialization of it. Everything started to be on the rise. So people started to understand media and its powers a little bit more. In terms of changing, they're open to radical experimentation, like to try different things. And they like to combine somewhat incompatible concepts. I think the best place to see this kind of demonstrated is in typography. So around this time, I know this is now going to lose 99% of you. But you know some basic typefaces out there, like Times New Roman and Comic Sans, which were not made in this time. But during this time, there's a group called Emigre who started working on this magazine called Raygun. And they started to deconstruct typefaces quite a lot. And it became kind of this grunge or a dirty kind of font era where they kind of actually take the typefaces because of computers and the rise of that. You could kind of deconstruct and change and make them almost illegible. The closest thing we have that today is I think Kendrick Lamar recently came out with a font called Ramen. Oh, no, he tweeted about this font called Ramen, which takes a font and makes it squiggly like ramen. Okay, look at all the amazing stuff Bert knows in his head. Completely useless. Completely useless. In terms of learning, they like the Socratic method. They like questions, and dissent is encouraged. And like they like to engage in that kind of way. In church, they actually were open to greater interactivity, open to different styles of worship, willing to break tradition, but also starting to question a lot of that Christian upbringing. So this would be the group that saw their parents, their grandparents really followed God. Their next generation parents said they did, but lived differently. And for them, they come along and say, well, I don't know what to believe, but I still believe there must be some sort of God. And so coming to church comes in that kind of brokenness as well, that kind of place. Finally, we come to the millennials, or Generation Y. And some of their key points, 9/11. I think from 9/11, you have to understand it's not just that moment, but it's that moment where actually suddenly terrorism became worldwide. And that whole terrorism thing has two things. It has the sense of paranoia, but distant paranoia. So opposed to World War II, where you knew you were in a war and you could be bombed and stuff like that was happening, this kind of paranoia is like, yeah, something bad could happen, or maybe it won't. This group, they say, is probably the most confident, connected, and open to change. And there's also a lot of them, apparently. They're also growing up in the internet and information age. And this is something, I think, for those of us who are not in this generation, we find it hard to understand what it must be like growing up with Google. It's weird for me to think that you guys just think completely differently than we do because of the internet. And that's a real challenge. It's a real kind of difference that I think sometimes we don't realize is happening even when in our church. In terms of change, they embrace electronic community and communication for better living. As referenced by Clash of Clans, though that is not the better living part, but you're open to using that as a form of communication, actually, as a collaborative thing that they're working on in this game. All right, by the way, I'm not endorsing this, and I'm not sure it's a good use of time, but I'm just using it as a reference for what we are for today. So don't everyone go home and be like, are we going to start our own BCC clan? Okay, this is not the point of today's message, okay? I'm going to regret this forever. Okay. In terms of learning, they're a lot more interested in finding meaning. And I think one of the things that you're seeing in today's kind of teaching curriculum is they're trying to make things more holistic, actually, to say not just we're going to do maths, English, chemistry, biology, in terms of science, but it'll take something and try to deconstruct it and look at it from different kind of angles. This is more kind of holistic kind of understanding. And I think this generation seems to engage with that kind of understanding a lot more. They want to understand not just what is happening, but why and the bigger picture for these things. And they're also much more experiential. There's less of the sense of, like, I'm fine to sit here and write, right, like the way we were raised, right? Do 150 math problems, like, and then do the next page of another 150 math problems. It's what you just do until it's drilled into your head till there's no point. I think Chinese schools still teach this way. Write the same character 10 times in these boxes. we refuse to change the way we've taught because it's the way that's always been the right way. Whereas actually, there's a sense that actually they want to explore and understand in kind of a different way, a little broader sense of diversity. In terms of church, actually, there's a greater desire for the church to be more committed to social action or ways to influence the community. They also look to the church to be one of the pockets of community. They're a lot more open to having electronic technology in church and being used in that way. They're also, at the same time as being progressive in this way, they're also really willing to revisit old traditions, things like liturgy. Or even reciting things. And that's really interesting because this millennial group, and I think it's also because they're the youngest, they seem the most hopeful at the moment. A lot of these categories get changed throughout time as they get older and the next generation kind of comes along. But there's a sense that there's this kind of hopefulness into what might happen. And even are willing to say, they like looking back all the way to the grandparents' generation. And for them, that nostalgia is kind of more hopeful. In that there is good things there that we can revisit. That's why you have a lot of people looking back to saying, well, maybe if we get off the grid, means we're not relying on these technologies that came out of the boomers and the Generation X, but we're kind of going back to something which is simpler and purer is what they're kind of thinking. So looking at this thing, we have this realization that actually even within this church, among these different groups, things change. People change. Generations change. One thing after another kind of happens. And actually, a lot of us get really uncomfortable with that. So we just like to think about ourselves. And actually, this is the way I think the best kind of describes how we feel. Yes, I'm hip. I've used an emoji. If you're interested, Instagram is doing a huge study on emojis and how people use them. But there's a sense of, like, why do things have to change? Why does it have to be so complicated? Why can't we all just be the same? See, the thing about this is these differences produce tensions. They produce tensions inside any organization. So when I was doing a lot of research for this is not something they just talk about in terms of churches or sociology. They talk about this in workplaces. They talk about this in any kind of organization because these tensions exist. And they exist even within the singular family unit. The thing about we don't like these tensions is because it's uncomfortable. So if you imagine each of these as one of the generations, they're all kind of pulling in their own different directions. The question then becomes, so how? What do we do? Now, a lot of places, they'll say, okay, well, what we need to do is we should just make our own separate churches that do our own separate things. And so each of those groups says, well, we're just going to go off into our own corners and build our own things. And that happens a lot. I think one of the common things is people are like, well, we should build a church for the millennials. We got to really make something that engages them. And that's really good because actually there's a whole group of them that aren't being reached and they need some place where they can feel free to do what they want to do and use their electronic devices and experiment with electronic music. And that would drive like a traditionalist crazy because be like, I don't even know what's happening in this church. Why are there candles on the floor? What is this person painting? A picture on the outside. This is not church. So I've been to some of these churches and for me it's like, oh, this is a pretty cool experiment. But I can understand some people going like, there is no church here. God has left. The same point, though, just in a great contrast, imagine a young person trying to go to one of these very old churches. And one of the greatest things about these old churches is these people have amazing hearts. And they say, we want our church to grow. We don't want it to die. I know there's just 7 of us now, and we're now 85. We need to get more young people in. But when the young people come in, they're like, why are they so noisy? They have to follow into exactly what we've been doing. And no young person wants to stay there because they're like, what is the deal with there? There's no God there. God has left that church ages ago. And both sides are so horrible to each other. And they both sides believe that they have something that the other group doesn't. So these group pockets, but they're not bad at the same time because you need to have spaces where things can grow and they can develop and they can expand. In our church, though, we don't have that. I could decide to say, well, let's just all make everyone split up to their demographic groups, and we'll watch one group get really old and die, and one group have no money because they're kids. And it doesn't make much sense. But the problem is that means you have to learn how to live with those kind of tensions. Now, these tensions aren't actually all just negative, but actually they're really positive. You have things to learn from each other. If you're willing to learn, if you're willing to listen to different generations, then you can learn and discover good things about them. This is something that the Bible talks about a lot, actually, the idea of passing on from generation to generation. And it talks about, the Bible talks about them in two ways, actually, negatively and positively. You can pass on negative things from generation to generation. You can take bad habits, bad attitudes. That goes on from generation to generation. Or you can pass on good things. We look at Psalm 78, and I'll read this out. I'll have some of it up. Psalm 78 says, "Give ear, O my people, to my teaching. Incline your ears to the words of my mouth. I will open my mouth in a parable. I will utter dark sayings from of old, things that we have heard and known, that our fathers have told us. We will not hide them from our children, but tell them to the coming generation the glorious deeds of the Lord and his might and the wonders that he has done." There's the idea that one of the first things that we are responsible for is telling the generations how amazing God is, who God is, the story of God in our own lives to other generations, to other people. And this is just within a singular community saying we've got to let them know, because you don't want to hide this in the dark. You don't want to just keep this kind of stories to yourself. It goes on, he says, in verse 6, "that the next generation might know them, the children yet unborn, and arise and tell them to their children, so that they should set their hope in God and not forget the works of God, but keep his commandments, and that they should not be like their fathers, a stubborn and rebellious generation, a generation whose heart was not steadfast, whose spirit was not faithful to God." There's this idea for us to be people who are active in not holding these stories to ourselves, but sharing them on. But not just the good, but also saying, you know what, there are things in my life that have not been good. This is the wisdom that I have, and I want to pass this on to the next generation. These are the mistakes that I've made. In other words, so the next generation that comes along will love God more, will put their hope in him, so that they won't be like the previous generation in the bad ways, but instead take the good ways and move them forward. We have a little bit more about this in Titus chapter 2. In Titus chapter 2, it says, "But as for you, teach what accords with sound doctrine." And so he's talking to saying, look, we need to make sure we understand what it is that's the truth, who it is that we believe, what is that about. But then he goes on and he says, "Older men are to be sober-minded, dignified, self-controlled, sound in faith and love and in steadfastness. Older women likewise are to be reverent in behavior, not slanders or slaves to much wine. They are to teach what is good and so train the young women to love their husbands and children, to be self-controlled, pure, working at home, kind and submissive to their own husbands, that the word of God may not be reviled. Likewise, urge the younger men to be self-controlled. Show yourself in all respects to be a model of good works, and your teaching show integrity, dignity, and sound speech that cannot be condemned, so that an opponent may be put to shame, having nothing evil to say about us." Now, the problem whenever the Bible says, older men do this and women do this, everyone immediately says, no, wait a second. Why should you tell me what I should do? And thanks to the 1970s, the rise of feminism means, like, when we come to a passage like this, what does it mean? What if I don't want to get married? What if I don't want to be a submissive wife? What if I don't want to have a husband? Well, I don't want to work at home. Actually, I do want to work at home, but my NHS won't let me. What does it mean to be kind of submissive to our husband? And at the same time, these older men, sober-minded, dignified, self-controlled, sound in faith and love, well, where's the passion? Where's the vitality? You know what? I want to do my own things. Like, if you strip this back and you read what this is saying, And you said to someone, look, if you lived this way, would that be a bad thing? Actually, most of you would say, actually, all those things are actually probably good. And when we talk about submissive, we don't mean just being pushed around, but there's a sense of, and all of this, love, temperance, patience, demonstrating goodness, integrity. In other words, we have to learn how to live right, to be loving, to be patient, to be understanding, to be modeling this to the people around us. This is why at the end it says, show yourself in all respects to be a model of good works, and in your teaching show integrity, dignity, and sound speech that cannot be condemned, so that an opponent may be put to shame, having nothing evil to say about this. In other words, even the Bible is saying, look, people are not going to judge you just by your words, but by your actions. And if you don't have integrity as a person, if your heart isn't right, doesn't match your actions, then something's wrong. People are going to know. when we look at this, we can start saying, well, look, for us as a generation, and for, I know when you're younger, you think, oh, it's just talking about the older people. You're always older than someone else, okay? You're always older than someone else. Even if you're newborn, there's a baby right behind you. Okay, you're always older than someone else. In other words, this responsibility falls on everyone. The hard part is those generation gaps, when the distances seem large. When you begin to think like, well, they aren't listening to how I'm demonstrating God's love. They need to sit down and have me give them a lecture on how it to behave, and then they'll know. But we don't understand that actually there is a difference in the way they understand or how they learn or how they're taught or what they're looking for or what they're going through. It's why even in this passage in Titus, he doesn't say, this is how you are to teach them. Bring them to the synagogue, have them all sit down in chairs, and when they disobey you, you strike them with this cane. He doesn't give a didactic way of teaching, but he's saying, look, you need to demonstrate this in your life, in love, in truth, in the way that you live, so that they can know. In other words, your desire is so that they know God, so they don't make the same mistakes that you've made. And that becomes, as every parent knows, your deepest prayer. Because the more and more you raise your children, you realize you have less control on them than you would like. But you need to trust God more and more for all of these things. The other thing is you learn that you have to trust your community. Because we actually spend less and less time with our kids, but we have to trust and know that actually our community is blessing them. How do we help them to grow? How do you help them move forward? If I could sum up that passage, says, live what's right, demonstrated out of love and humility. Now, this is just, again, older people passing down stuff to the younger. And I think the way, especially in cultures that really rely on respect, this is fine for us. We understand, I am older than you, you must listen to me. And actually, most Chinese people or cultures that have, there's stuff inbuilt into your culture that will always make you respectful. You will pour tea to the older person. You will give older people the stuff first. You will say auntie and uncle, even though you don't know how they're related to you, and they probably aren't. There's always that sense of respect or connection there. But actually, is there something else that younger generations offer the older ones? Well, there's a lot of examples in the Bible of this. And I just highlighted three: Caleb, Joshua, and David. Caleb and Joshua first were the spies that were sent out. And then a bunch of spies went out, actually. And Moses sent them out, and he said, look, you guys are, you're younger. You can scout the land. I'm going to entrust you in this. Joshua, you've been my servant for many years. Go and have a look. And they come back, and Caleb is actually full of faith that they can overtake this land. The rest of the spies who went out, they don't say how old they are, it doesn't matter. They did not have that faith. But Caleb quieted the people before Moses and said, let us go up at once and occupy it, for we will well able to overcome it. One of the things you see about younger generations is they are, okay, like it or not, they're a lot more full of faith and hope. Somewhere along the way, we became a lot less hopeful and a lot more cynical and a lot more doubtful. And I think the way we would say it is like, no, we're just more realistic about what life is really like, okay? We know how it goes. And all right, an example is I do this all the time with Oscar. And to be fair, I know I'm smarter than him. But he will say something like, no, I want to put this extra figure onto this thing. And I'll say, Oscar, it cannot fit. There is no, it's impossible. And then 2 seconds later, he's managed to squeeze that character there. And I look at it and think, there is no way in the world that you should be able to do what you have just done. And yet here I am, I look like the fool because I told you it's impossible, and we always tell you it's impossible, and then you go ahead and do it. You don't know what the word impossible means, and that frustrates me because I'm teaching you wrong. But they have this kind of, in some sense, naive faith. And isn't that why Jesus says, unless they have faith like a child? Because they believe more. Caleb believes more what they can do. Joshua later comes along and he has to take over for Moses. And he is afraid. He's not courageous. So he cries out to God and says, God says, be strong and courageous. Be strong and courageous. I am with you. And in this, you understand that Joshua, even in his youth, even in being younger than half the people in this tribe, will go forward and learn how to lead. David. And I'm not talking about David after he becomes king. I'm talking about David and Goliath. He's just a young boy. And they're standing in front of the camp of the Philistines. And then Goliath comes out and says, who are you going to send out to beat me? No one's, all you guys are chickens. Buck, 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 buck. And then David comes in, what's the deal going on here? And his older brother gets really upset. And he comes in and he yells at David, actually. Typical older brother looks at David and says, what are you doing here? Oh, it's just because you love war and bloodshed, huh? So bad. You should just go home. And David's like, what is this guy? Like, who is this guy? Who does he think he is that he's better than God, this Goliath guy? So he says, I want to go and fight him. I want to represent him. And there's this spirit. There's this faith. There's that hope that pushes, that inspires. But if we are full of cynicism or judgment or doubt, you can crush that. I tell you, it's not hard to crush someone's young spirit. Mainly because you also know what that's like. For those moments when you get a little bit older and you realize, yeah, actually, I'd really like to try this. And someone says to you, don't. You're just going to hurt yourself. It's not going to end well. And you will shut down and you'll just be like, yeah, you're right. You know what? I can't. It's not for me anymore. And the worst thing I hear all the time in churches is when the older people just say, yeah, I'm just too old. Just let the younger generation do it. No, 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 no. That just means you have given up. If God didn't want to use you anymore, then you would die. If you're still alive, there's a reason. In other words, open your eyes and see, well, why does this person have this faith? What is driving that? How can I be inspired by that? See, the younger generation, they sometimes bring faith and a different perspective and a different life. We always kind of write that down to saying it's energy. Oh, the younger people just have more energy than us. But actually, you know what it is? They just believe more. They believe that God can do more. And they want to see God do more. This is the beauty of the interchange of a generational church. What can we learn from our differences? It's not about trying to make each of us just like the other person, but saying, well, what can I learn from you? How can I make you better? In other words, it's this idea to be involved in blessing, in love, in humility. And you cannot do this if you believe that they are dumb and you are right. There's no way you can do that because that arrogance, that pride will get in the way. And we all do that. And the reason we do that is because we don't understand that other generation. Because they're doing weird things and they like weird stuff. And it's not like us or the way we've done it. But if we can learn from each other, isn't there something great there? If they can see something in God, if you can learn from that, if you can be blessed by that, at the same time, if you can learn from them, this interchange lets your faith expand, lets God push you into new territories. This happens with things like appreciation, starting to appreciate the differences within our generations, between the gaps that we have. It also works by engagement. In other words, actually having to try and talk to someone that's not the same generation as you. And it is hard, okay, because sometimes, I'll be honest with you, I have no idea what's going on in life group. I'm just like, I don't know what's going on now. I'm really too old. And I sit there and I think, I hope Ben knows what's going on because he's 20 years younger than me. I'm sure he can keep up with them. But I feel literally older and slower. I keep telling myself I'm young, I can do it, but it's not. I'm not. But I'm learning and I want to engage and I see things in that life which is beautiful, which is wonderful. The other part is encouragement. Actually encouraging one another, and that's just both ways as well. Younger generation encouraging the older generation, especially if you have faith. Sometimes it just takes someone younger to say, no, really, I think we can do this. And I tell you, even the most cynical old person will be like, fine, go ahead, you try. And that is good enough. I tell you, when someone who is cynical and old says, go ahead, just try it, that means like, okay, let's see what you can do. It's that corporate engagement, that kind of hope. There's also what that talks about in Titus, demonstration. All of us are responsible to be demonstrating a life of integrity, of goodness. And when we struggle, to be honest about that. Sam, your testimony last week was phenomenal because there you are, so much honesty in that, so much truth, both in your desire to be more like Christ and at the realization that you are not as much as you would like to be. For all of us saying, God, I want to be more and more like Christ. I want to be more like you, Jesus, in everything. Make me more like you, Jesus. If you think about it that way, you understand Jesus is always demonstrating God's love, God's power, God's truth to the people around him. And finally, understanding. Learning to understand the different generation helps. It doesn't mean you have to do everything like the younger generation, but it means you understand a little bit where they're coming from. Parents, I will tell this to you specifically, start learning how to do this now. Because when your kids hit teenage years, they will knock you in such a tailspin that you do not know what's happening. You don't understand why they are there where. And that generation gap will suddenly become so clear and so evident. You will be frustrated, confused, disappointed, feel like a failure as a parent, come to church crying. This is from my previous experience, by the way, from the previous generation. And they'll all feel like you failed as a parent. But when you begin to understand this generation gap already, you will be a little bit more prepared to listen, to learn, to see your children growing up, and also seeing how to build them forward. There's one more thing that I'd like to kind of throw out there, and this is something that I'm calling extended family. I've been spending a lot of time trying to figure out how to do this, and I realized maybe the best way to do it is just let it go organically. But the idea of extended family is this. What if we, whoever you are, individual said, I'd like to extend my family. I'd like to be someone who welcomes, and not just on a superficial level, but really gets to know someone else in a different generation than mine. I want to invest in their life. I want to be part of their life. See, because actually that's one of the biggest things about community that we need, actually not just the superficial, but saying, you know what, I want to invest in this and I want to extend family. I think for us, we always think, oh yeah, that should be the families, the older families with kids inviting us younger people to their houses so that we can eat their food. In exchange, we will play with their children. And on one hand, that is the most superficial, easiest way to look at it. But on a deeper level, it's actually saying, well, it's not just that. But even for some of you younger guys saying, yeah, actually, is there people I could invite and say, you know what, why don't you come hang out with me in my place, and I'd like to learn from you. I'd like to just share in conversation. In other words, you start to make deeper connections. Because 20, 30 years down the line, when you're a lot older, or maybe something happens, maybe you're not as strong as you used to be, maybe your family's not as together, who are you going to turn to? Will you have extended brothers and sisters here to turn to look for support? This is important because for a lot of us in this place, we might end up being single for the rest of our lives. Where's our extended family going to come from? For the others of us, we might be divorced or widowed. We don't know what's going to happen, but we start making these plans now. Maybe some of us will have, our children will end up being orphans. Who will help to look after them? We start building these roots now and saying, actually, I want to learn how to extend my family. I want to learn how to listen and be part of other people's lives and not just be my same kind of group, my own social circle, because there's a richness and a beauty to being cross-generational. And I want to invest into that. If this is something that sounds interesting to you, if this sounds like something that you feel like, yeah, this is something I'd like to trial, then go ahead and do it. But try to stick to the things that we said. Be a person of integrity. Love God. Love each other. Learn. Listen. Encourage. And start committing into that and extending outward. The easiest level of commitment is come around my house, have a meal. But the way I look at this over time, this develops into something more. Let me help you financially. Oh, do you need a hand? Do you need a lift someplace? You can always call me. You know, oh, do you need an emergency number? I would love to be that emergency number for you. Because when we think about it, isn't that what what church family should really be like. Extending beyond just the superficial or the passing. But there should be a depth there, something that is helping us as different generations point each other to God and to loving him more and to knowing him more and to seeing God in each other's lives. Because there's something even powerful about having someone from a different generation pray for you. To say, let me lift you up to God for you. Now, this has great ramifications, doesn't it? Some of you with parents who aren't Christians, but you have an extended family or not. Hey, can you come with me? Can you come talk to my parents? It would be great. I need someone a little bit older than me to come and talk to my parents about Jesus. Or my parents are coming for a visit. Can you guys get in connection with them? Just to have a, can we all come together? Because I tell you, one of the things parents love is seeing their child being taken care of by other people. They feel so much love there. And in that demonstration, you start saying, yeah, this is because of God. This is what church is like. This is what family is like. Extended family. I think for us, our church is still fairly young in terms of demographics, but we're learning and we're changing and we're growing. Let's continue to be full of God's grace and love, but an eagerness to see God actively at work in each other's lives. Shall we pray? God, I thank you, actually, because I have this amazing benefit of being connected to so many different generations in the church, and it's something that I have the privilege of seeing and being part of people's lives. And God, I yearn for that same blessing to be in everyone's life, Lord. And we know it's hard for us to cross generations, to invest in people who are different than us, to listen to people. And I'm sure a lot of us find it even difficult at times to talk to our own parents because of the generation gap. And yet, Lord, let us humble ourselves before you, to be eager to listen, to learn, to be like Joshua, who was so keen to sit at the feet of Moses, to learn, to hear from him. And I think of Jesus, who was at the temple, so eager to even sit at the feet of the other teachers of the laws, to engage, to discuss with them. And even more so, Lord, how he was so willing to share and bless with those around him as well. Jesus, be stirring in our hearts and challenging us today. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. We're going to come to a time of some worship now, so just invite the worship team to come up.